Is loud enough?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Good afternoon, Abosai. We're going to begin part two of our Chazar Shir for Spring 2017, Contemporary Halacha. The final Bezat Hashem will be on Thursday. We're going to go through right now the Avodah Zarah Shir of Rabbi Ezra Schwartz, then we're going to do Rabbi Willett's Shir on Contraception and Family Planning, then Brain Death, then we'll do Rabbi Shechter's Mikvahs, possibly in that order. If we have time after that, we may do some more. We'll see if we do anything additional. Okay, so let us begin with Avodah Zarah, which is definitely not a great thing, because it says that it's not a good thing. So let's talk about Christianity. What about Christianity potentially makes it into Avodah Zarah? So the Rishonim pointed out two separate issues. First of all, the issue of the Trinity. The Trinity means that there are three parts of the Godhead, Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. So if you say three things, that by definition is polytheism. The problem is that they say the three is really one, and one is three, that there's three aspects of a single thing, so they view themselves as monotheists. So if that was the only issue, we could question how bad it is. But the issue is even worse, because it's a separate aspect of the Christian theology, and that's incarnation, which means that God was incarnate, in flesh. That means that God took a body of a flesh and blood, which means that God has a body. So even if you hold the Trinity, for some reason, wouldn't constitute Avodah Zarah, there's a separate aspect that would be Avodah Zarah because of the incarnation belief. Now, the Rambam in numerous places talks about Christianity, and in every which one says that Christianity does constitute Avodah Zarah. The one place is, they talk about the day called the Yom Tov of the Nutzrim, and then Rambam says the people that believe in the Messiah, their Sabbath is on a Sunday, that's Avodah Zarah. And then he talks about Sam Yenem, he also says, the day of Avodah Zarah. And then the Rambam talks about the Kari Hadas, he also says that Yichud Hashem is not just that Hashem is one, because you can divide one into two halves, and three thirds, and four quarters. But while Hashem being one is not one that can be divided, rather one that's unique. But if once you say that there are three parts of one, that by definition is denying the concept of the oneness that our belief has to be believing in. So that's the opinion of the Shita Saram. There is an opposite Shita of the Meiri, which we'll present in a moment. The Meiri was bothered, as Tom says, other Rishon are bothered by a stira between all the Mishnayos that say clearly that you can't do business with an Oved Avodah Zarah, can't heal their sick, etc. Yet, real life in the medieval times was that they did do business with Goyim, with the Christians. So the question is, how would it be possible to do the things against the Mishnayos and Avodah Zarah for Christians? So Tosfos and Avodah Zarah has two suggestions, three suggestions. Number one, maybe there's a heter of Eva. That even though it's us, there's a worry that they're going to do something to us, so there's a heter Eva. Number two, Tosfos suggests maybe the Goyim in our times are not really devout, and they're not so religious, so that's also going to be, they're not real of the devil and stuff. And then, third of all, Rabbeinu Tam suggests, maybe the Isser of Masav and Matav doing business with a Christian, with a Oven of Zara, is only the things that are themselves chafzas of the Oven of Zara, like, candles or sacrificial incenses and the like. But if it's just a toothbrush, there's nothing to do with Oven of Zara, that wouldn't be a problem. Even if you do it on the day before or the day of their holiday, which would mean, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We don't do some things on Shabbos. Now, here you have another answer. That's the Yud to the Meir. Notice Tosfos didn't say what the Meir is about to say, and that is, the Meir says that the Avodah Zarah that's discussed, all those Mishnayos in the sense of Avodah Zarah, are talking about people who are barbaric. However, the Umos and Geduros, the Darki and the Musos, people that are cultured, that are have a solid set of coherent laws, they are not the Ode Avodah Zarah that the Mishnayos discuss. So basically, according to the Meiri, in, as we just described, in numerous other places, says that Christians would not have a din of the Avodah Zarah that the Mishnayos talk about in the Rambam passage. So you really have the Rambam says it's Avodah Zarah, the Meiri says, no, our cultured, Goyim, if they're Christian, even if they believe in whatever they believe, it's not the Avodah Zarah of the of the that's discussed in the Mishnayim. Fascinating understanding that the Meir says in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, they talked about the word Natsri, which is used by Chazal. He said Natsri does not mean the one from Nazareth, that does not refer to Jesus. Rather, Natsri refers to a certain pasuk, someone from Yirmiyah, returns to Zion, who comes from a land of Mevilchad Etzar. So we're Natsri, and they had a sun god, and they practiced their religion on Sunday, their holiday on Sunday. So that's who that of the Avodah Zarah refers to. The one who says Natsri says Meir, not the Christians that we know. That could be a censor. Could it be that he wrote it from the censor? But there are numerous Meiris throughout Shah that make this point that of the Avodah Zarah are not the Christians do not constitute Avodah Zarah. Now, the mainstream posts can really reject this Meiri, but Rabbi Blyth is fond to quote that Meiri from a Salvation, that Meiri is mere curiosity. But where the issue comes, as far as what do we hold, we Ashkenazim, is based on a Tosus and Sanhedrin Samach Gimel. Tosus, right, the Gemara tells us that you're not allowed to have a shutzpus with a guy. Why? Because the Torah says regarding Mishpel making shmuas, alo yishama al picha, not that you can't just say, don't speak something, but also it should not be heard, you should not cause it to be heard. So in other words, you can't cause a guy to swear in his Avodah Zarah. So now, Tosus quotes the Rashbam. The Machlok is Rashbam and Rabbi Natan. Rashbam says, you're not allowed to swear, make them swear, even if it's you want to prevent the Hefsim Hom. Rabbi Natan says, you know what? Nowadays you can make them swear so that you don't lose money, because this is the Chiddush of Tosus. The Tosus says, nowadays, Bizman has said they all swear by Kadoshim Shalem. They're saints, and they don't hold them as deities, and therefore, these are three words. Lo Buzaru Al Kas. I'm sorry. We have not found Lo Ashkechon De Asim Lignom La Aferim. The Shatif is though is to cause them to do Shitov, and therefore, Bereinoach Lo Buzaru Al Kas. That's what Tosus says. The question is, what does Tosus mean? There are two possible suggestions. In the Rishonim, the Rabbi Yerucham of the Rishonim says that Shituf, right, what we've been discussing with Trinity, is Lahusra Alka, Goyim, their halacha of Avodah Zarah does not ask for the Trinity. It's only asked for me to believe in the Trinity. I'm a Jew. But for Goyim, just like Goyim, I'm different halachic as far as what's Gezel for them, what's Arayas for them. They also have a different parameter of what's Avodah Zarah for them, and Shituf for them is Mukher. That's what Tosfos means, Lo Buzaru Al Kach. According to that, Tosfos is coming out that although polytheism is Avodah Zarah, but Shita, if you believe in God plus some helpers, or that would not be Avodah Zarah. So in that case, Christianity might not be Avodah Zarah. However, the Nodav Yehuda argues on Rabbi Yerucha in how to understand Tosfos, and he understands the Nodav Yehuda says that all Tosfos was saying is that there's no problem to swear to a shituf, but to actually serve shituf, to believe shituf, that would be Avodah Zarah equally for a Jew and for a guy. And if a guy were not allowed to do Avodah Zarah, not allowed to do shituf, I'm sorry, it happens to be that there's no way for you to make them swear in that shituf. Now this is Tachma brought down, this machlokas, the Ramah actually is makeup, like their first opinion, and says that shituf is mutter, for Goyim, it's not considered Avodah Zarah for Goyim. However, the and the Shach Takah pass is a lot like that Ramah. However, the Shach passes that way. The Shach and the Ramah pass this this year being Ruf. However, Salvation said the Shalom can't be Shach and Tosfos. They're wrong, and it must be that Salvation can't imagine the Shittah would be Mutter Goyim, and he assumes that even for Goyim, it would constitute Avodah Zarah. Fine. Let's talk about the, now that we've addressed what is Christianity, let's talk about entering a church. We assume in general that Christianity would be Avodah Zarah. So can you enter a church? Well, the Mishnah of the Torah talks about, says you're not allowed to enter a city that has Avodah Zarah in it. Well, if that's the case, then clearly entering a church would be us, now self-answer, by the way, but there's machlokas, Yishamim, whether or not you're allowed to go into the church to run away from somebody running after you, the knife who wants to kill you. that what would be the Isser going in? So there are a few sources. Number one, Gemara Avodah Zarah says, talks about being Marthik Mibes Avodah Zarah, and that Isser, then Moshe, the scripture says that's not just to obviously not just to do and serve them, but even to just look at the artwork, that also will be a problem, because the point of that artwork is to inspire their religious belief. And it's Aser, perhaps even Aser Daraisa, and they will therefore not be a Heter of Eber, and an Eber will only permit an Isser Rabbanan, but if this be an Isser Daraisa, that would not help. Another Isser that would be violated by entering a church would be Altif El Ha'ilila. So, the Shiloh, what that Pasuk means. Tosa said, it means not to look at images or but as art. So, looking at Christian artwork would constitute Vodka. Okay, that's a church. Let's talk about the next point, which is mosque. After all, they believe there's no Trinity issue. They believe our God who created the world in 7 days, so you go into mosque. So, Tzitz Eliezer quotes Iran. Iran says that since they bow down to Mohammed, therefore it is considered Avodah Zarah. Ravadi comes and says, wait a second. The Ran, you're right, says that Islam is Avodah Zarah. But you know who argues on the Ran? The Rambam. And guess where the Rambam lived? The Rambam lived among is a Muslim. So therefore he knows better. And the Rambam holds that although Christianity said was Avodah Zarah, the Rambam holds that Islam is not Avodah Zarah. And therefore Ravadi says we should follow the Rambam, who knows better in this sugya than the Ran. And therefore, a mosque does not constitute a Avodah Zarah, and one would be permitted to enter a mosque according to Rabbi Bar. As far as halacha l'maaseh details of elections, for example, my neighbor will have elections tomorrow, Tuesday. You know, these are the 5 times you should make sure you go with your elections. So the Igros Moshe said, if you're allowed to go to a church, a social hall, or basically not allowed to enter the sanctuary, classrooms, but a social hall, for voting, because everyone sees you're not just going to vote, but not doing the services, different entrance. Fine. As far as a church is no longer a church, or cloistered up in Washington Heights, Shanta says it's up to. Because you're admiring the church architecture, that's a violation of Altif Kanal and El Eglin. But there's Magen Avraham who says that the Isser is only Re'iyah, like focused, concentrated, looking, staring at, not an Isser of Estafi. So if you go to a museum, and there's a church art, and you just, oh that's Krishna, I'm moving on, that would be a excellent time I'll get on job. Okay, let's go to the next point. That Yul is unpermitted to say Jay's name. The Chavetz Yonah says that you're allowed to say Jesus, because that was his personal name, just happened to be his name, before he became considered a deity. However, saying the next name, you know, C-H-R with an I-S-T, that would be more problematic, because that might mean Mashiach, and that saying or referring to him with that name, CHR, with IST at the end, would be as though one is the Kabil of that person or that thing, and therefore that would be a problem to say that second. That's the end of the Shir on Avodah Zarah. Let's now go to Rabbi Willig's Shir. Let's now go to Rabbi Willig's Shir on family planning and contraception. So, ready for next year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, is the video okay?
Yes. Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. So the question is there what is the mitzvah for? Is the mitzvah to have children, or is the mitzvah to do a mitzvah that can buy their children? So there are going to be three scenarios where we will see the machlokas, there's one thing, the will want to suggest something different. The first issue is, can you fulfill pruvu with children who are born before you're miskaya? So we know the halacha is that, you're miskaya, and you had children before, and then miskaya, and then are miskaya afterwards. So even though there are no bias afterwards, you fulfill the mitzvah. So I'm going to skip through some here. That the Maisabiyah is not the mitzvah, because there was no Maisabiyah bi'ados. Maisabiyah is only a hasher, and the mitzvah is having the children, not children born, but having, that there be the present, the state of being children while you're Jewish. And if a Goy is a Geyer and becomes a Jew, and he has children, so he can fulfill the mitzvah. Rabbi Willig said, no. Of course the Biyah is the mitzvah. Oh, but he didn't do the mitzvah. You're right. into the mitzvah, but what the sheer of Tukravuk is that there should be two children, a boy and a girl. And once you have that boy and a girl, the sheer was met. So there's no parchikos to have Tukravuk once you married, once you became Jewish. It's not that you fulfill the mitzvah of Tukravuk, it's that there's no longer a chiyuv of Tukravuk, but there are two children or two. Second, the Kubdavukadis Machlokas is what happens if a person has a child that is there or has moms there, he does fulfill the mitzvah. The question is, why? It's a mitzvah Bavera. The Machlokas thing that answers very simply. Because the Bia is not the mitzvah, the Bia is only a hechsher of the mitzvah. Therefore, we don't say that Isser did a mitzvah Bavera by a hechsher mitzvah. So that solves the problem. However, Rabbi Willis suggests that no, the mitzvah is not to the beer. Oh, you want to know why don't we consider mitzvah b'avera? We do, it is mitzvah b'avera. And you did not fulfill mitzvah for a boo. But it just means that if you have a mitzvah, you fulfill for a boo. Not that you actually fulfill the mitzvah, not that you get any brownie points, rather that you once you have point four, you're relieved from the seed of a mitzvah of a boo. But you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. Because the talk is, according to everyone, the Maisabia, which is indeed a Mitzvah Bavavim. The third area is the situation of Mizrah Bambak. If there's Zera floating around in a pool of water from some place there previously, and enters a woman and she becomes pregnant. So the Pesukim say, the Shmuel says, Avim Hu B'chol Dava, which presumably sounds like even to fulfill the Mitzvah Peruva. So, says the Mitzvah, well, you fulfill the mitzvah of Purvu, and there's no Maisabia. What does that show? That the mitzvah is not Maisabia, rather, the mitzvah is having children. It says everyone would know. The mitzvah is the Bia. Oh, but there was no Bia here with Mitzvah Bat Mati. The answer is the same answer all three times, according to everyone willing. That the chidiv of having children, once you have children, there's no more as a longer chidiv of Purvu. So you're not going to get smart for fulfilling Purvu. But you fulfill Purvu in the sense that there's no longer a chidiv of Purvu. Not that you're going to get brandy points for approval. Okay, that's the end of that discussion. Let's go to the next point. The next point, Rabbi Willis points out that approval is only fulfilled if sorrow is miyukad after. Therefore, we'll mention a number of four scenarios where the child is not yet misgabi zafra, yuta zafra, and therefore, there will not be fulfilled to approve them. I actually got a shout about this yesterday. A couple that, unfortunately, they're actually not married yet. Planning on even wanting, is considering getting married. And the woman might not be able to bear children. So there's a discussion, they're not even married yet. A discussion that, oh, but she could use donor eggs and it'll fulfill approve them. But wait a second. Well, we'll deal with that shout in just a minute. Basically, let's look at the next two halachas, and then we'll come back to them. Let's say a guy marries a Jewish woman marries a Jew. So that Jewish woman is Jewish, her children will be Jewish. They're not the useless to that man who impregnated her. Well, this guy converts later on. So the kids are not related to him. So there's no peruvu, even if he's a guy. If a non-Jewish man marries a non-Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man marries, then the prince would ask to see fulfilled proven. But according to, if he was married to a Jewish woman, not so far. Now that he's married to a Jewish woman, though he gets married later, the kids that he had are not Yuchazatra, and therefore he's not fulfilled proven. Next case, if you have a guy, the kids are the Shifcha, and he's the guy. So again, the kids are not Miachis, the Yuchazatra, and doesn't fulfill proven. What happens if a Jew who marries a Shiksa? So, since his kids are not Jewish, right, they're non-Jewish woman's children, but not Jewish, Nami of Zachra, did not fulfill the mitzvah for. Oh, now we come to our Shaila. Let's say you have the egg donor. Let's say there's a Jewish man that marries a Jewish woman, and they can't have children because of proper issues. So they get an egg donor, a non-Jewish woman. Well, a non-Jewish woman who provides the eggs, if we assume, that Jewish child, follows his status is based on the egg donor, his genetic donor, which is a non-Jewish father, that child is not Jewish. If that child is not Jewish, then the Jewish husband did not fulfill proof of oath, because this baby is not Jewish, right? He's Jewish, his wife is Jewish, but the egg donor is not Jewish, and the baby is not Jewish, and therefore the baby's not being zachem, and therefore this husband did not fulfill the permitah of proof of oath. So, oh, that's pretty serious. If that's the case, that means that if a couple would find themselves needing to get an egg donor, if there's no pruvu that he's going to fulfill with that egg donor, because the child is not from the other zakra, so maybe there should now be an issur of shuri chazel batala, because it's levatala. If it's for pruvu, it's not levatala. But if it's he's not going to fulfill pruvu, then it's levatala. So we will suggest that maybe there won't be a kiyum of pruvu, but there's still a kiyum. A kiyum of the mitzvah shevest, this might not be the raisa, might be something less than the pruvu. But since there's still mitzvah kiyum of shevest, that would be considered that it's not levat tachna, and therefore Zach would be able to be procured to enable that that fertilization, that in vitro fertilization. Fine. Let's now talk about another. Next topic is what happens after 10 years. When the couple doesn't have children, so the halacha is that he's not allowed to stay with his wife, he has to get himself another wife to fulfill the mitzvah for a vote. So the willek is a very creative suggestion. How come we don't have to do that nowadays? We don't force anybody who's married for 10 years to replace his wife and take another wife. And the willek is a very creative suggestion based on a meshachah. Meshachah says, how come women are not obligated to approve? How come only men are? So, Meshach Chachma says, maybe because, I know the Gemara says in Kishul, but why? So, Meshach Chachma says, because maybe having children is dangerous. And the Torah wouldn't command you to do something like that. Right? It would die trying to do it. So, therefore, women couldn't be obligated. Next, Meshach Chachma has another suggestion. Meshach Chachma says, maybe the Torah understands that marriage shouldn't be broken, because it's a good marriage. And therefore, if women are machayavus and they couldn't, have a child, they'd have to get divorced and marry somebody else. And they break one marriage. Now, a man being chayav is not a problem, so a man can't have a child from one wife. He can always get another wife and have a child from another wife. But if a woman were machayavus, she would have to get divorced in order to fulfill her miss. So that's what the world, based on that Meshach Chachma, we can say at least Alpi Agadita, it's a gigantic tradition, that nowadays men can't take another wife. So therefore, in the same way we said a moment ago, that a woman doesn't have Purubu because we don't want to destroy marriage, therefore she's not having Purubu. So here, where a man nowadays is not able to take another wife, and therefore the only way for him to fulfill Purubu would be to destroy marriage, perhaps this case, man would not be obligated to prove a book because it would destroy marriage. That's a very cute suggestion, at least in the realm of Pachti Prah, that why nowadays perhaps a childless couple, we don't force them. Let's now talk about the mitzvah of Shev. Tumor says, Pasuk says, that even when a person has children, he's young, he should still have more children afterwards. So even after there's a kiyum of purvu, there's still a mitzvah to continue having children because of shevet. So it says, Kiddush, that even if a person has one child and maybe didn't fulfill their by purvu, still fulfilled shevet, and since they fulfilled that partial mitzvah, that mitzvah of shevet, there's also no need to divorce one's wife. Now, what is the gather of this halacha called shevet, this mitzvah called shevet? The Ramban says something very important. He says it's not a real din, not a real mitzvah, not even a chiyuv derabbanan. It's ke'ein yishuv derech, a good idea. That means that you don't have to have children necessarily after the group. So let's hold this idea and then we'll come back. The Rambam tells us that the quote in the Shulchan Aruch right at the beginning of Eben Ezer, that a husband has to be with his wife, the whole owner of the owner until he has a bankrupt. Afterwards, she could be mokel her owner. The Beis Shmuel asked, why could she be mokel her owner? There's still a chiyuv to fulfill la'erev al tanach l'death. Why would her mokel work if there's still a mitzvah that he has to fulfill? So, And we know that he has to keep on doing the mitzvah to fulfill the law, to fulfill the Shabbos. And why have the proof of that what about the additional mitzvah of Shabbos? There are two answers. The numerous answers. This too is suggests that, of course, after a person fulfills Purvo, she can't just stop and say be Muslim entirely. It just means that she could do it less, her owner could be fulfilled less frequently. So therefore, she could be Muslim once in a while, her owner, but yet there's still an overriding mitzvah of Shabbat. It could just be less frequent. Perhaps we could suggest another answer. Maybe based on this Ramban and Lachas that we mentioned some minutes ago, that the reason why we don't obligate her, once she has Purim, once they fulfill Purim, we don't obligate her, or why we allow her to be Malka, is because Shevet and having more children, not a field government, it's like Ramban said, that's only king, you should have access. It's a good idea, but it's not a real thing. Never Medina, according to this, a woman would be able to say, you know, I have a boy, I have a girl, I don't want to have any more children, that would be okay, according to this understanding of the Ramban, may I deny the idea, but nevertheless, halakhically permitted. Let's now talk about the next point. What about a person who wants, they have a child, they have two children, they want to push things off a little bit, or they don't want to have any more? So Rabbi Willick has a pula that basically says that if a man has a bunch of kids and he has to get remarried, let's say his wife dies and he's scared to marry a young woman because there'll be a lot of fights, then he's allowed to marry an Isha Sheina Bas Bana, which means that to prevent fights you're allowed to not have more children. So based on that, let's say he is married, it's not that he has to find a new wife. He is married, but he doesn't want to have fights with the wife that he has. Perhaps, based on that, for a moment, extrapolate, he could say, I don't want to have any more children, so that I won't have to fight with my wife, that's an interesting idea. Furthermore, there's a chasm sofer that says that once they fulfilled, after they have children, a woman will have to drink kosheli parim and make herself unable to have more children, so if she had very difficult pregnancies, she's better to take that kosheli parim because she's not clear to be mataras, not because of shibud to her husband. Okay, that's the kula of the chasm sofer. But that's only if she has very difficult pregnancies. In general, in terms of delaying pregnancy, family planning, once a person already has a few kids, or one or two kids, Rav Moshe says if she's weaker than average in her pregnancy, all women are weak when they're pregnant. All women feel nauseous, they don't feel good at various parts of their pregnancy. But if she's worse off than a normal person's pregnancy, then Rav Moshe says they could first of all, she could wait a little bit even if they haven't filled her blood. After they fulfill Purvo, she can wait up to 3 years. And if she's sickly, after she Purvo, if she's not sickly, then she has the right of saying, I don't want to do La'erev al-Tanach Edef, I don't want to have any more kids, because that mitzvah of La'erev al-Tanach Edef, of having more kids after fulfilling Purvo, doesn't require her to be sick, more sick than normal. If Willig has a kula, perhaps not a kula, against the Moshe, will it suggest that if they have a special needs child, then maybe after one child there would be a heter to wait. Chazanish said, what do you use an IFM after 6 months, a year after any baby, because successive pregnancies one right after the other without waiting, in between, doesn't allow the body to get back to itself. And Rabbi Willig does feel comfortable that feels that doctors corroborate that it's good to wait a year between births. And not only that, in the olden days, nursing, the entire Gemara, nursing caused an automatic 2-year contraception. We see the only Gemara Yitzchak that they used to nurse for 3 years, actually, for 2 years at least. And Rabbi Henkin is quoted as saying that there was a half melita that after a woman had a baby, she could wait 2 years. The Chas Shalom is a chapter of the world, but that's what is recorded. Now, as far as method of contraception that are permitted, So the idea is uterine tonic that's turned in the woman's uterus to prevent implantation of the fetus, that is putter. There's Miranda IUD, which has a hormones that regulate a woman that's put into IUD, that also be putter. However, it's important to note that if a woman does have a monthly drip of blood because of that hormonal adjustment, that drip, even though it's not a flow, might be considered an etheparaisa. So that's important to be aware of. The use of spermicide is also an okay method. The worst method would trip pill is also sorry, pill but also mutter when there's an effort to delay. Two things that are not okay would be surgery. That's serious, that's definitely a problem. Condom would be also just so that would be a latent about bonnet, it's not being discussed, not entering our body. And as far as the time frame, that might be is permitted for certain women who are permitted to use both. That's enough for right now. As far as everything we talked about was after present child, the two children, what about avoiding children at the very beginning of marriage? So here there are three sources for public sites that would make it a problem to delay bearing children at the beginning of a marriage. First of all, the Rambam Paskin, Loki Saktana. Ktana means she can't have children. Because So what's there is if she can't have children because she's a Ktana, she can't have children, but you're turning her into a Ktana by putting her on the pill. Secondly, the Shulchan Aruch says, I at least the Isha today live from liberals. So the point of marriage is to have children. Finally, the Rambam says that we mentioned earlier is Kayan Libel, full own of owner. So if you're to fulfill the mitzvah of so if you're not going to be doing that, it's not doing what the mitzvah of prerubah requires. So, yes, it's true that Rambam says you could delay marriage. They never say you could get married and delay prerubah once you're married. Okay. Now, to finish off this year, we'll just talk about situations where there's genetic testing and there's an indication that there are genetic complications. So, if the couple knows they're going to have genetic mutations or life mutation, so Igros Moshe says that the Shatana should bear it to husband so far to endure Tzar Gadol for this mitzvah Rav Yisrael. But Shlomo Zalman says, interesting, Tzara, first of all, is they're going to have, again, a very high risk pregnancy, very high risk of a genetic mutation or something. So if that Tzar is in the husband's eyes, again, here's the mitzvah for a book. That Tzar is more than one-fifth of his nechassim. But it's no mitzvah for a book, it's more than a chomesh. So, it doesn't like that story so much, but he suggests a different story that it's a vitzel of the Hadra Yitzchak to those unborn children that might be sick if they were to be born. Perhaps, so, he exempts one from Purubu if they have such genetic problems. That's the end of this year. Next year. Okay, let's move on to the next year. Next year is Brady. So, the mitzvah of Brady, hold on 1 minute, please, okay? Hold on 1 minute. Let's get back. Okay. I'm back, I'm sorry. So now we're going to talk about brain death. So when we talk about brain death, historically, who was a person who was, ate brain death, took to life, or brought back to life? We have the story of the Benach Torfitz. And thank you very much. Thank you. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehyeh Dvaro. So the Radbaz is asked, according to Ma'at Omer, the Pinchas, is Eliyahu, how could Eliyahu become Tameh, Pilchad, how could Eliyahu Hanavi become Tameh to be Mechaya, the Tzarfis' son, this woman's son, after all, if Eliyahu is Pilchad, is a Kohen, so Eliyahu is a Kohen, and he's touching a dead body, that's not great. So one opinion said, there are three suggestions. Number one, that really the baby didn't really die, it just says that he appeared to die. Second opinion is that this lady was not Jewish, And since she wasn't Jewish, there are some opinions that hold that a mace is not mitame for Alma. And you'll have to say that he didn't lie on this big boy, as because it sounds like it's saying, but he lied above the boy. He didn't actually touch the boy. And therefore, he wasn't, there was no Tumas Ohel, because this would be assuming he's a baby's a guy, and put Tumas Ohel on top of the guy, which is also an assumption. That's another suggestion. Third suggestion is that, fascinating suggestion, that it was near to Eliyahu that he would be successful. And therefore, this resuscitation had halakha that was considered tzar marriage. Which again, all of these suggestions are very creative. Each one have their issues, but that's, that is his history. Let's now talk about other issues. First of all, there was a time of 250 years ago, that in Europe where they wanted to, governments said they shouldn't bury anybody until 3 days to ensure that the person is actually dead. The poskim that were very vociferously that Jews are not allowed to wait those 3 days, you should have to cry to bury him. The question of brain death really began with one invention, and that is the respirator, for the following reason. It used to be that if a person stopped breathing, their heart would stop beating, because if they don't have breathing, they don't have oxygen, then there's not going to be any, they're just going to die, right? So the respirator all of a sudden created a new possibility. You see, as long as there's breathing, the heart can continue. Now, the respirator created a situation that a person is not able to breathe. If you would leave him as he is, then the fact that he can't breathe, there would be no oxygen in his blood, and he would die. What a respirator enabled is that even somebody who doesn't have his own ability to breathe, the respirator will breathe for him, and that the fact that the breathing is happening for him, even though the brain is not functioning, but the heart will continue to pump, because now that there is oxygen in the lungs because of this machine, and the oxygen will go up to the heart, and the heart will continue to breathe, because the heart is able to function even when there's no brain function. So what you now have is you have a dead brain, and you have a person who, with his dead brain, who's not telling his body to breathe, but even though the brain is dead and the body is not breathing, the heart can continue to beat even after there is no brain activity. So that's the question of brain death. Could we say that the fact that the heart is pumping enough, is that enough to say that the person is alive? Or no? Since they can't breathe on their own, so, and their brain isn't doing anything, so the brain doesn't have any activity, so just because the heart is pumping, that's not considered for them to be alive. That's the question of me. Is the pumping of the heart, if the person independently can't breathe, but the heart is still pumping, so does that pumping heart constitute life? There are really very few sources. We've mentioned two sources, and now the different sides of the equation, different sides of the defense, understand these two sources. Source number one, the Gemara Yuma Pei, talks about a person who is trapped in the rubble, and you find him, and you want to check if he's alive. Gemara says, Apecham Nubodik, the Machloka, when the Gemara explains, when you find him feet first, right, you come across some feet in the rubble, and then you're going moving upwards towards his head, how far up towards the head do you have to check? Then Machlokas. One opinion says you have to go all the way till the nose, and the other opinion says in the Gemara that you have to only check till the heart. Now, if you read this Gemara in a literal sense, it sounds like it's Machlokas whether you have to check his nose if he's breathing, or you have to check his heart if the heart is beating, which means machlokas, but sounds like it is, what is the criteria for death? Is breathing the criteria for death? Once a person stops breathing and they're dead, I don't care if their heart is beating, or is their heartbeat the criteria for death? And therefore, even if they stop breathing, like brain dead person, is not able to breathe by himself. But since the heart is beating, he's still alive. That's what you might say. However, Rashi does not read this part of it. Rashi said that the reason why you have to continue looking after you pass his heart, you still look for his breath, Rashi says, because sometimes you can only tell the heartbeat from the nose. Meaning, you might not be able to, even though you don't find that, even though there's no, even though you might not find a heartbeat, so you might think he's dead, but maybe that you miss the heartbeat, so check for breathing, because if he's breathing, you know that his heart is beating. So according to this, the machlokas that we see in the Gemara is not whether the person, whether death is defined by a heartbeat or breath. Everybody agrees that the heartbeat is the criteria of death. The question is, how can you determine, how can you measure whether or not there's a heartbeat? Is it enough to just check the heart? Or do you have to check if there's a heartbeat also by seeing if he's breathing? Because if he's breathing, that's the heart that can beat it. It's possible to have a, you could, if there's no heartbeat, then there's no, if there is a heartbeat, there could be breath that they can have a breath. But if there's a breath, he's definitely, the heart is definitely beating. So do you have to check that? So, according to Rashi, it seems that the Gemara here is discussing not what is that, rather not the, what's what the siva is, rather that, what's the siman? Is it siman to the heartbeat breathing, or is the siman to the heartbeat checking the check? And according to this, both opinions agree that if there's a heartbeat, the person is alive. And then for a brain dead person, since you're right, he's not breathing, but a brain dead person, his heart is beating, and therefore he is still alive. And therefore, according to this reading of Nathri, such a brain dead person is alive, you certainly can't kill them, but they're limbs. That is one source, that is the main source of Sugya Brain. There's one other source that needs to be discussed. So that's a Mishnah in Ahava talking about. So if you take a person and you chop their head, are they tamei or not? So Mishnah says, if you chop off their head, even though the farfasim, right, even though the body is still twitching, it's still sad, the spasms are still moving, the body is nevertheless tamei. Now there are numerous ways to understand this Mishnah, why there should be tuma when you chop off the head. Meaning, why is it significant? What, if they're dead, they're dead, they're not dead. What you're just chopping off the head. So there, what's the significance of the decapitation to cause death or to make their beat? So the Rabbanut says, the Rabbanut understands this to be that, well, if his head is chopped off, there's no breathing. So the Rabbanut understands that brain death is death, and therefore he's not breathing. I don't care if his heart is beating, his heart can continue to beat. Since he's not breathing anymore, therefore he's considered to be death. That's a little schwer because, you know, there are plenty of people, like Christopher Reeve, who was on a respirator, he was living, he was giving lectures, he was married, and you're telling me that since he can't breathe by himself, and he's dead, he's in time of all, even though he's talking to you and, you know, giving lectures, it's a funny shita. Okay? Rav Tedler has another suggestion of what he sees in this mission. Rav Tedler says that the mission is telling you that if you've cut off the head, your tamei, the body's tamei, that means that the brain is not doing anything. So therefore, even if you don't have a physical decapitation, but you have a dead brain, what he would call a physiological decapitation, the brain isn't doing its job of making the body work together, then that would be considered, the mission is telling you that that's death. The problem with that opinion is that reports show that even after a brain is dead, even after a brain death, the body still works in an integrated way. It maintains blood pressure, it maintains temperature. Even that comes from a brain dead brain. So how can you say that that there's no brain here? It really is doing something, maintaining temperature and blood pressure. Okay. Another suggestion, Rav Bais, Rav Shnefter, Rav Yashiv, Eliezer, they all say the brain death is not death. So what is the Gemara saying? What is this Mishnah saying that if you chop back the brain, he's dead? The saying is that the exact opposite, not from fucking, is telling you that any motion in the body that moves you, makes the person alive. However, if you cut off the head, that tells you that in this case, whatever movement is in the body is not going to make you alive. It's not sure that you're alive. So in other words, they use this source to show you specifically that Preta is not dead. So it's saying, normally, under all circumstances, any movement in the body, any pirchos, for example, a heartbeat, makes you alive. Kamashmalon, the submission says, once you chop off the head, then that pirchos normally does have to life. That heartbeat, that normally does have to life. The fact that the head chopped off makes you, in this case, consider that person's, and therefore, they use this as a proof of care that brings that it's not dead, the person's still alive, because as long as their head's not chopped off, the heart is still beating, that is still considered a vital motion, a motion of vitality, and they therefore reject brain death. You should be self-evident and nobody should die. Okay, not gonna mention. Just so you know, I edited a lot of material to clarify those sugyas from other sources, so it might be what I said might be a little bit more thorough than the analysis of the sugya that Dr. Reichman presented. He presented the topic, because he didn't have as much time. Folks, on these details, I just add a little bit of material to fill it out. We're now going to go to the last shiur that we have to do, and we'll see if anybody wants. And we'll stop after that. The last shiur is the halachos of mikvahs by Rosh Hashanah. Everybody can see me?
Yes.
Yep.
It's nice to see everybody. You look great. Watcha. I'll be doing well. Okay. So, the first thing, we're going to have a few small points about like 5, 6, 7 areas. First point. There's a mikvah and there's a mayim. There are numerous differences between a mikvah and a mayim. First of all, the mikvah needs 40 sa, whereas the mayim is mitayir b'mashu. Now, as far as a mikvah for Kalim, it happens to be machloka, not machloka, it happens to be the raisa, Kalim don't need 40 sa. Kalim just need a revius, right? Sure, 40 sa is mayim shah, you'll pull it back. But if it's a clay, it doesn't need 40 sa. That's the raisa. Nevertheless, we do a bottom, we require 40 sa even if it's just. I'm not fine, that's one. Second difference between a mayim and a mikvah is that a zav, and it's not a difference, but a zav, for example, is specifically Meimaga, and Meimekva will not work for a Zav. Third Nikuda would be that the difference between Mikva and Mayim is that the Mikva must be Ajibore, must be stagnant, still water, while a Mayim can be Zav, but keep flowing water. Fine. What about, I'm skipping different pieces here, that was a point here, there. I'm trying to focus more on the ish on the main segments. What happens if you have a giant who his body takes up more than 40 sub? So, would 40 sub sufficient again? Like, if you have a way that contoured to his body that he'd be completely immersed with lead, but not with, but with exactly 40 sub, would that be sufficient? Rav Tashova says, no, his body needs more than he is born. Rav Tashova says, no, sheer sport, that's the thing that we have, and that should be sufficient. But the person can say, no, the Aruch HaShulchan is right. Of course, it's not fit. It's not even more than 40 sub. Okay. Let's talk about a river. We mentioned that if it's a mikvah, it has stagnant. Rainwater, I'm sorry, river water is not stagnant, it's moving. So if that's a mikvah, that's going to be a problem. If it's a mayan, it's okay. So how do you know if it's a mayan or a river? Well, where is this water from? If this water is rainwater, that's called a mikvah. The running mikvah water is possible. If, however, it's coming, the root of this, the source of this river is from a mayan, so it's from an underground spring, well, mayan water, spring water, is spring water is kosher, but it's a chila, it's kosher if it flows, and therefore will be mutter. So, theoretically, every river should depend on the source of the river. There's machlokas in the Gemara, and there's a Rabbah cites this halakha as mutter b'di'evin shasadcha, that even if there is some rain, every drop of rain from above has two drops of iron water from the ground. Which basically tells you that you could always assume as a rabbah Let me add one point. What happens if there's a mixture between water from the spring and water from the dragon? Then we would follow Rome. Now, as the Gemara has an opinion that every drop of water from the ground, from the rain, has two drops of water connected that come from the ground, that come from Maya. In other words, that opinion is saying there's always considered to be Rome of May Maya. And then, according to that opinion, that you can't rely on the Shas Avtak, could basically be told about anywhere in any river, even if this river doesn't seem to have majority of spring water, it seems like it's majority rainwater, which should be problematic and flowing. Nevertheless, this opinion holds that indeed there is majority of May Maya, and we can rely on that for Shas Avtak. Now, as far as
kind of question,
yeah,
if the river is Zohlin, so then how could it, then sometimes you can still use it as a mikvah.
If a river is Zohlin, if it was considered a Maayan, and its source is from an underground spring, that is permitted to be Ovel in that underground spring's forest river.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Now we're saying, Ramat Zakufa, that even if that's not the case, and even if the majority of the water is indeed rainwater, the Gemara, there's at least an opinion of the Gemara that says if there's rainwater, you know that there is connected that underground spring water as well, twice a month, and therefore Allah considers that it's considered May Maya, even though we don't really understand how and where that Maya water is coming from, but it must be, and we can rely on that Shas Avtak. Okay, let's continue and say what kind of sila, what kind of flowing water it means. If you have a mikvah and it's crap, what is it that it's flowing out? That should be a psil. How much of a psil, how much flow is there that warrants it? What warrants of silk? Well, the pasuk said after is the chitahani keres, that sizable flow out that makes it possible. How much is nikeres? So that tshuva says says machlokes. If you mark the level of the mikvah at a certain height, and then an hour later it's lower, you know that they recognize the flow. Others say a much greater chumra. If you mark something 24 hours later, there's a lower water level, that's a recognition that we have. So the Torah says it's lower, that's the Zechila HaNikaras, and it's considered possible for a mikvah. Okay, let's now talk about something different. Let's talk about Shinui Marim. If you pour oranges into a mikvah, you pour wine into a mikvah, and it's going to change the color, that's going to be a filter at the bottom called Shinui Marim. There is a Sefer Mishnah Achrona has a very important suggestion and says that that's only if the liquid is poured in and the liquid changes color. Because the Gzeira is that you people think, a lot of people have a mikvah of orange juice or a mikvah of wine, which is wrong. They think it looks like wine, it looks like orange juice, so you can be told that a mikvah is entirely orange juice or wine. However, says Mishnah Achrona, if a solid is dropped in the mikvah, and that was the discoloration of the water, we don't have that concern because you can't be telling us oh. Therefore, if you have a chlorine pellet, even if it causes a change of color, like green or something, that's not going to be a problem because it's solid. Let's now talk about another. The Baha said, the Gemara says, that besides the fact that mishuven on water is possible to make mikvah with and to pass the mikvah, there's an additional halacha that the construction of the mikvah has to be aliyadei tahara. Mikvah man yet tahara. The pasuk says havayotna aliyadei tahara. That means that if something is tame or a person is a tame, and that person or that thing that has become tame facilitates the creation of the mikvah, knows the bucket, knows the mishuven, that will also pass. For example, if you push a broom, not shuvim, that's how it makes kibble, it's not lifted off the ground, but you take a broom and you push water with a broom by pushing it into the mikvah. So since you're the one who created it, you're a speaker, you're a person in the kabbalah, you make it happen. That in the kabbalah, that it will be possible, need to arise from. Similarly, you direct rain flow on a roof over a metal tray. Let's say the mountain tree doesn't have a lip, and therefore it's not Maya Shuvim, But since the Vayotre is Makam Tumma, and it's directing water into the mikvah, that makes philosophy possible. How come metal drain pipes from the roof? They could also be theoretically Makabo Tumma. The answer is because since they're attached to the ground, they're part of the ground, they're attached to the ground, they're made to be like that, therefore they're not Makabo Tumma. It's not considered Havayaso, they don't have Makabo Tumma. Now, with this in mind, we have to come to a situation. Let's say you turn on, you allow water, you open up a dam and allow water to flow in. So, was that you doing it? So here we have a discussion in the Gemara that you have a knife. Now let's talk about this issue of what we consider a Maisa Adam, what we consider a cloth of a person, or not a cloth of a person, in the context of Shechita, for example. By Shechita, let's say there's a water wheel, there's a flow of water, right now there's no water flowing because there's a dam holding the water back, but if that's the water wheel, that will turn soon when water is released, there's a knife and the knife will slice the head off, perfectly shafting an apple. We know that Shechita has to be Koch Kavra, and there's no Koch Kavra. But a guy, 5 meters upstream, lifts up the dam and releases the water turns the water wheel spins, and does the Shechita. So is that considered the Koch of the person or not? There we assume that the Koch we shown from that lifting of the dam is considered Koch Kavra of the person. Koch Shein is not the Koch Kavra. The person. The problem is, what is the definition of Koach Rishon? Rashi says, it's right near the dam where he released it, that's Koach Rishon, that's the Koach Rishon. It's further down away, it's further away from the person's actions, that's not considered the Koach Rishon. But we don't assume like Rashi. Rather, we assume that it depends on the amount of water that would be released for one moment. Whatever flow, let's say, why don't you listen to that first burst? That would be considered a person's maisa. Whatever comes after, is that not the question of how distant, rather than whatever water was directly resulted from the person's actions. So, let's say you push a button and fill up a mikvah, for example. That first amount would be basal. That would be koch kavra. And anything that happens later on would be okay. So, with this in mind, if you put a chazrish, the chazrish of Kavir Gom, air, that's all when there's water pent up, and you're lifting up the dam, there's haftaras hamoneh. That's when we say that only the beginning is a person's actions, but anything else is just the flow of gravity, whatever else. However, point out that if you're action, the human action, sets into motion a whole system, and something ends up happening, that is all considered Maisa Adam. And then they say, let's say you press the button, and the machine makes tzitzit. Press the button, and the machine makes matzah. That is considered the Shua. And though you did it, you did the whole process, because all 40 steps of the machine, of the matzah baking, all 40 steps of the machine making of the tzitzit, of the strings, you set it into motion, that would be considered as though you did it. So here, for an hour discussion, we're talking about a mikvah, when we want to discuss that a person's action and participation will be havayasa yidei person, so if you cause it to happen, that would be a problem. If you just release the water, then we get into the discussion of only cooperation, not corruption. Let's go to the next point. The mission, what about making a mikvah out of solid, of shelag, and of ice, and of bara? The mission tells us that they do not have a pistol of shluvin. That means if you have a bucket full of ice, if you had a bucket full of water, that would be shalva pasul. If you have a bucket full of ice, or a bucket full of hail stones, or a bucket full of snow, that's not pasul for shluvin. The Taimosev cites a raivin that even though it's okay to, there's no psul shluvin, that's told me as far as the soul, past the mikvah of Gimbalud, which my should to create an entire mikvah, by using buckets of shelik or hail or ice or other solid waters, that would be a problem. So therefore, l'chatchila, we avoid making a mikvah shekula shelik or shekula aran. Okay, let's go to the next point. The next point being how we, the different boroughs of a mikvah. So typically, there's a part that's full of clean water, that mikvah. We don't want ladies to go into that because that will get the water dirty. And besides, if we just leave that there, then the water will be so dirty that we don't want to go there. So therefore, we have another part adjacent to that, and we have a hole between them. Mishnah's, and there has to be a size of two fingers, not okay, same as a radius of two fingers, is a diameter for two fingers, so we have four fingers. Where do we learn this halacha? That's called Hashaf, it's a kiss, the two boroughs kiss. The bar of rain water, this is the bar of Tevila, where the woman will immerse. Where do we learn this halacha of Hashaf? That's called Hashaf. Where do we learn this din of Hashaf? We learn it from the fact that even though you cannot be mitahir liquids in a mikvah, you can be mitahir water. Why? Not if water became tamer, you put it in the mikvah, you take the water and you lower it into the mikvah, and the touch is on top. It's mostly not because this is because the tevila of the water, because you implanted the zoveya, this water, into the bigger picture. In other words, the limud, the hashaka works between two mikvahs, the hashaka works. That's learned out from Zriya. Zriya is when you plant something. Based on this Chon of the Chas Tzokhman. As the Sabbath says, just since we learn Hashaka from Zriya, so it has to be in the same way that you're Zariah. Just like the Zriya is in the ground surrounded by dirt, so too when you want to add water to a mikvah and make it mutter, it has to be water that you're adding has the middle of the part, and therefore, if you just have a hole on the side, allowing a connection between two bones, that will not be sufficient. And Rosh Chai says, no, of course, that's incorrect. It's against the Mishnah, put you like that, a connection on the side of the part, and the nevertheless, as the service says, you have to have like a hole that's coming up to the middle of the mikvah, letting the water come out, and that's how you have more water, and that's how you would connect more water coming into the bar. Then you'd have water coming into the water, the water would overflow. When it overflows, into the next, let me explain that. If you have a bore of rainwater, you now take some tap water, the hose, coming up through the mid, into the middle of that rainwater bar, the water will now overflow over the ledge into another bar. That is water that was nizra. That tap water was nizra. It implanted into the mikvah of rainwater, and the water that overflows into the next bar, that will be called bar. That would be okay. That leads us to another issue. And the issue that leads us to is Nasan Sav and Natan Sav, meaning the fact. The Mishnah says that if you have a mikvah that is made papers, I'm sorry, you have a mikvah, and then you take out, you pour in a bucket of orange juice. And you pull and you remove a bucket from the mikvah of the orange water mixture. If you keep on doing that again and again and again, Mishnah says that that mikvah won't be kosher as long as it's still removed water. Once it's 50% orange juice, it will not be kosher. That's by orange juice, meaning it's not water; it's a different liquid. What happens if you have water, but it's water that's muscle, like my shiurim? So will that be a problem? So the Rambam and the Ravid say, you know what, just like the Mishnah said that there's a problem with Nasan Sav and Natal Sav and Eros, that Tumnam, Natal Sav, Nasan Sav and Natal Sav will also apply by Shpuvim. Okay, others reject it. But in the Shulchan Aruch we don't pass like that Tumnam, and therefore, we deem in the Shulchan Aruch, if you have a mikvah, that's favorite water, let's say to make a rainwater, you could pour in all the other water that you want and let out all the other water that comes out, whatever it is. And I don't care how much visual rainwater is still there, Well, Pesher Midik that Shulchan Aruch. However, the Shav is Makrif Rambam, and the Shav wants to ensure that the Rambam would require him, that the jar of the water in the bar still is original way, which is going to be a big problem because you can't change the water, and it's going to be dirty. Or not get on the table there. So because of that, we have to create a situation, allow different boroughs to have one borough with the rainwater and allow connections to other boroughs, but still have your main borough that has its original rain. So one solution is Lubavitcher Mikveh, the kisser, the shacharach harav, suggests the following: that you can make a bar al gabi bar. That means is you have a big bar, say 80 stuff, and you put a board, a horizontal board in the middle, and you put the mine for the rainwater on the bottom, goes to the bottom, and you put a board on top of that, and you put a hole through in the board that's covering this mikveh. Then you pour other water. Now, the rainwater is cold, the water is usually warm, and the cold water will stay there. And therefore, it will be open. The place that the water is going into will be open, there will be a hole that connects the upper water to the bottom. But the bottom water is colder water, that's the rainwater that stays cold, and that's not going to diffuse, it's not going to become diffuse, it will stay there. The water where the woman is, that water will change the upper water, that will be water that you'll be able to change it clearly, and connect to the bottom bar, so everything will be okay. The Divrei Chaya says, wait a second, but we have a mission that talks about katafis. Katafis is water flowing down a hill, and it's flowing out, and that's from there, that you cannot have hashaka vertically, you can only have hashaka side to side. Here, according to this Chabad Mitzvah, you have hashaka on a vertical plane. There's a mikveh here and a mikveh here, and it's water connecting between the top and the bottom. That's a problem. Now, the passage that Divrei Chaya's critique is incorrect, because still, if katafis is only when water is flowing, maybe it's not considered connected. If you just have a vertical connection, that should pass to be okay. Okay, let's finish that nekuda. Let's talk about another nekuda. Finish with this, and then I think we'll finish for the day. That is, what about warm mikveh water? If you have warm water, so at the time of the Gemara, the Mordechai said, oh, there's only one way to have warm water. You have water to clean, and you warm it up. Therefore, all warm water, by definition, is going to be time shulman, historically. Therefore, the Mordechai says that in the time, because that was the case in the time of the Gemara, there's going to be an issue that I wanted to have a mikveh with warm water. Nowadays, that's not an issue, because nowadays we have ways to heat up water in a bar, in a stomach, clean, sitting on top of a, in a pot above the fire. You just have a heater inside the mikveh. So, the only problem is, so therefore many are able to use a warm mikveh nowadays. It's not like that Mordechai chump is there a blend. The problem is going to remain. What about Friday night? Friday night, besides this issue of Hilchos Kippah, is a different issue. Seiros HaBalanim, take warm showers, warm baths on Shabbos, even if it's the setup before Shabbos, if you're worried that somebody's going to play with that heat on Shabbos, the bathhouse be attendant. So Shulchan Aruch Rav has made up a big kula that he's very proud of, and he said that, what's the concern for Seiros HaBalanim, that maybe they'll warm the water on Shabbos? So if you go to the mikveh, the way we go to the mikveh, right after Shabbos begins, right at the moment Shabbos begins, where there wasn't enough time for water to be heated up on Shabbos, perhaps there the tzeiros habalon would fall away, would not be there, and therefore a woman wouldn't be able to be tumped in a mikveh, if she goes, I am getting a Shabbos. That's the Shulchan Aruch Rav's kula, but he says, is there any reason why I'm going to go to Al-Habas, where this Dimatir is going to a warm mikveh on Friday night? That's in the Beast for Shiurim, and thank you for listening. Thank you for coming tonight. If any of you have questions, you're welcome to email me. As I said, the final exam will be on Thursday at 1 p.m. in our classroom 519. And I wish you all a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.